Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Darkhearts.
Welcome all.
How's
Here
it going?
Here we go.
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like it feels like it's been a while since
yes.
we've done this?
Because
it technically kind of has.
I was thinking about that yesterday. I was like, gosh, I feel like it's been so long since I've like talked to Cassie, but it has kind of. So
yes. Yes, it has.
It's been a whirlwind. But
I know.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean,
we're just like halfway through September.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, almost halfway, but I'm just like, how?
Like barely. Yeah, we're almost there. So it's close enough. I know. I can't believe it either. It's insane. I love fall though, and it's finally feeling like fall in our parts. So
yes,
take that. But yeah, we're just... I don't know. We're just rolling by. I don't know.
We are
cruising through.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Like between work, adding hours, the podcast, and then trying to do my whole little side hustle thing with my Mystic Bookworm oils. I'm like, maybe I bit off more than I could chew right now. I'm
That's
like, it's
where
fine.
I'm at.
It's cool.
I feel like I've been overcommitting to things and I'm like, I need to start saying no to things because it's just too much, you know, sometimes and with kids and their activities. Yeah, I get it.
I know.
So that's where I'm at too.
Same. I'm just like, okay, you know, we've got flag football for my son now and we've got all the things. So yeah, it's just been fun. It's, you know, you're just like, okay, cool.
We have an activity like every single night except for Mondays, I think now. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And so last night I was like, oh, I'm just going to soak this in doing nothing because I know the next like month is just like something every day. So,
yeah. No, you gotta do what you gotta do to take care of yourself. So
self-care, baby, which I'm not really doing any self-care other than just not doing anything last night, but you know.
Hey, that's fine. I took a nap this morning. That was my self-care.
Hey,
like I
that's
got
great.
The kids on the school bus and I did some stuff around the house. I keep forgetting I was going to make chicken for dinner and I keep forgetting to take it out of the freezer. Now I'm like, at this point, it's too late.
Yeah.
I
know.
To get it to thaw.
That's, my daughter this morning said, can we have steak tonight when I dropped her off? And I'm like, well, I would have to still buy the steak and I would like to marinate it long enough for it to taste good. So that's probably not an option. And say, kid, also who's paying for the steak? Like,
she
wants all the expensive things and sorry, we're not there.
Yep. Nope. Yeah. So now I'm like, well, let's figure out what I'm going to do with hamburger because that thaws way faster.
Hey, there's a lot of options there. There's a lot of easy options. Yeah.
There are. My son is super into the little slider hamburgers.
Oh, yeah. Those are so cute, too. I just love them because they're little.
My daughter is like starting to finally branch out a bit more with things.
Uh-huh.
And so she'll eat them, too. So I'm like, you know, I'm like, it's either tacos or I might be making us some little sliders. Because the thing is, I don't use the grill.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know.
I love to grill. That's like the only thing I do decent, which is funny because I don't do anything else. So you would be fine at it. I think you'd be good at it, Cassie.
I don't know. I got to at least figure out how ours works or something. Like that is the one thing I haven't gone to that part, you know, of things.
Yeah. You have to branch
out.
Girl, once you go back, you'll never go back. Like literally,
once you go
mess.
Grill,
you'll never
die
go
on
back.
That hill.
Yeah.
Once you go grill, you'll die on that hill.
There you go. My favorite thing is the fact that you don't have to really clean anything up. So you will find anything you can grill once you start using
that
baby.
But see, that's how I feel about the air fryer because
that's
like,
fair
the
too.
Air
okay,
fryer
equal.
Is what I'll cook everything in now.
Yeah.
And
oh, I love
like it's
an
just
air fryer.
Right. And then like all you have to do is like you take the whole bottom part out and you just get really hot water and hose it down quick to get that grease out and dump
that's,
it and throw it back in.
That's so true too. So that's good. Okay. That's also fair. I dabble between the two and that's about it. So or else I throw something in the oven, but
yeah, listen, I hate to cook so much.
As do I.
Typically crock pot or like the instant pot.
Well, when you have like picky children too, it's a lot
yes.
of effort to go to for them to not eat it. So
yes,
you know,
there's a part of me that's like, maybe I have to like, I always tell myself, I'm like, I should do that thing. You know, when people meal prep and they make meals for the entire week and like freeze them and shit.
That's but then that so means
you're,
much.
That means you're committing one full day.
To just that.
To just that. But then I'm also like, but is it worth it to not have to do it?
No. I mean, I don't know. That just seems like a lot of effort at once. And I feel like there are some days in our house when it's like, my daughter will just ask if she can have cereal. And I'm like, you know what? Yes. Yes, you can. Because I don't even care right now. That means I don't have to cook something. And if you're totally fine with that, I'm good with cereal too. So
I would live on cereal if I could. Love or like it. Peanut butter sandwiches and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. So that's...
I'm sure we're not alone on that. So, you know, right? I saw a meme the other day that said my favorite childhood memory is not having to cook dinner for myself. And I was like, I feel right. that so hard.
Right? Because that's just it. Like, especially once you have kids, it's like, I'll eat whatever I want to eat and do whatever. You know, it's whatever.
If I want to have cake for breakfast, I'm going to have cake for breakfast. Okay.
My dinner last night was some leftover mini cupcakes at work.
That sounds actually
pretty good. Those tiny ones. I went up to the front desk girls. I was like, asking for a friend. Four of those mini cupcakes only equals like one, right? And they're like, yeah. I was like,
quarter of a cupcake, duh.
Yeah. And one of the girls, bless her heart, she was like, just go have some, girl. I was like, no, girl, I don't think you get it. I am the friend. I already ate four of them. That was my dinner.
Yeah.
It's totally. 9 p.m.
You know what? You just do what you got to do. So it's fine.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah. So yeah. Also though, on that note, if anyone has any, you know, really like great Instant Pot, crock pot, air fryer recipes that are
any
easy,
of the yeah. Anything that kids way. Eat, please. Except my kid doesn't eat melted cheese, so I can't even make like that throws out 8 out of 10 things. So
like you know, like she won't eat mac and cheese.
Oh gosh, no. She won't eat that. She won't eat pizza. What? She takes the toppings off the pizza, and I have to be gluten-free. So it kind of works out because
I mean,
I eat the toppings and she'll eat the crust. She won't eat nachos. She won't eat like Parmesan cheese on anything.
Oh, no, my daughter's obsessed with Parmesan cheese.
I'm obsessed with all the cheese.
I mean, same. So my daughter will eat a grilled cheese, but she doesn't want cheese on her hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
But she wants Parmesan cheese. Like, she wants to dump half the Parmesan cheese on her noodles and shit all the time. She's like, Mom, I need more. I can't see it.
Girl.
The girl, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You're Jesus. Fine.
Ugh, I don't know how. I don't know.
How do you
It's weird.
Not?
I thought kids, all kids like melted cheese. Like, come on.
How do you
That's like
not?
A staple like, to being a child.
Melted like, cheese is like ugh. Life. Cheese is great. But then you melt it. Oh, my God.
Any of the cheese. I will eat all the cheese, any kind. Yes. My daughter, by accident, we had, like, there was a salad at this wedding we were at recently, and she ate a bite of it, not knowing that there was blue cheese in it. And she, like, literally started dry heaving at the table. And I'm like, I'm going to need you to knock it off right now. And I realized it was blue cheese. And I was like, I mean, I get it. It's not a taste you probably are ready for, but like, let's be a little bit more dramatic about it, please. She could have won an Academy Award for that performance.
Yeah, no, my daughter does the same. Yeah, my daughter does the same thing when she has to eat something she doesn't like. Like, we try to make our kids take at least one bite of things.
Yes, which is good. I think that's good.
Yeah.
You're not forcing them to eat it, but then they try it. And if you don't like it, cool, but you might end up loving it.
Right. Like, you can't say no flat out. You have to at least try it. But,
yep.
Mm-mm. Yes. So. Yeah. Oh, that's, children.
That's oh, yeah.
All right. So do we, should we like get into the actual meat of the podcast now?
Yeah, because I know it's a good juicy one today. So
I tell you what,
I purposely did not go down the hole of like reading a bunch on it because I mean, I've always been intrigued about this case that you're going to talk about, but I don't really know a lot. So I'm excited because I wanted it to be fresh.
Yeah, turns out I didn't know as much as I thought I did. So first and foremost, let's do some trigger warnings. There's attempted sexual assaults. There's child abuse and murder. I'm also going to be looking heavily at abuse and manipulation in a relationship and of a minor. So if any of those things are difficult for you, you know, just like this might not be your episode. I'm just giving you a heads up now. With that being said, so this case is going in a different direction than I had originally thought it was going to be doing. because I'm going to be talking about Charles Starkweather and his murder spree that he went on in 1958 with his girlfriend, Carol Ann Fugate. And for those, this is in Lincoln, Nebraska. They were from Lincoln, Nebraska.
This is like the biggest serial killer case of Nebraska times, right?
Right. And what is crazy to me, the people have
heard of, I guess I should say. But
the thing is that always amazes me is like with how big this case is and actually how much it influenced like movies and media and stuff like that. A lot of people aren't aware of this case.
I don't know a lot about it other than he's like the known serial killer of Nebraska. That's literally all I really know. So,
right. So before getting into this, I knew him and his girlfriend were teenagers. It seemed to me like this whole, like, I guess what I always assumed was it started because they weren't supposed to be together, you know, that type of illicit love or whatever you call it. Right. So like, I've never like really deep dove into it. Mm-hmm. And so, I actually thought Carol was older than she was. Like I thought she was at least 16, 17.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I'm guessing we were wrong. But,
I also thought that she was a willing participant.
Oh, and, as did I. That was like a Bonnie and Clyde type situation.
And that is something we will get into that was spun intentionally. So, as I was sitting there trying to do this research, because I knew, like, I looked up and I saw there was, like, several shows that had episodes, but, like, I couldn't find where to watch any of these, right? They're all older, and everywhere I looked to watch, it said not available. Like, it would be like, oh, it's on Amazon. And then I'd go there and be like, no, it's not available. And I'm like, okay. But then I happened upon, which was interesting to me, because a four-part documentary that actually came out just in February of this year, and it's called The 12th Victim. Which there's actually a book by the same name. And this is on Showtime, which if you have Paramount Plus, you can watch it on there. So it talks about Starkweather and the murder spree, but it's really focused on Carol and her part in all of it and how and why she actually kind of became a scapegoat for the police force and the prosecution's office at the time. And so that's kind of how I'm going to focus my episode too, because there's still so much misinformation on the internet, like even on Wikipedia and stuff I was looking on there. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, one, like I get like Wikipedia, anyone can type anything. So I don't always take that, but like I watched that and I went back to Wikipedia and they still, I'm like, this is, you know.
And with it being like such an older case too, not as much information. I mean, it's really easy for them to put the information out there that they want out there back in that time.
Yes. So I'm still obviously going to cover like Starkweather and the murders. But I really want to kind of look at too how the system failed Carol and how even like an admitted murderer's words were taken more seriously because he's a man than that of a young woman. And like looking at how like grooming and abuse and all that can make people go along with things that they normally wouldn't, you know? And I do think that nowadays we recognize this a lot more. And I would like to think that if this same case had happened today, she would get a more fair trial. But then again, there's some things that happen that make me wonder. So, like I said, this took place in Lincoln, Nebraska. And again, like, even when you look at, like, the Wikipedia, this is, again, shows, like, how a man, even today, still will get more, like, credit and, what's the word, like, notoriety than the woman involved. Even though if she hadn't been involved, like, I feel like this just would have been another teenager, you know, another murderer. But, so his Wikipedia page, like, has all this information about him, and it's, like, a background, or, like, a paragraph of, like, his background and where he grew up, and Carol's has none of that.
Of course.
Like, we barely got, like, her birth date on there. But, so, Carol was born on June 30th of 1943, and she has an older sister, Barbara Fugate. And then a little half-sister, Betty Jean, because, like, her parents got divorced when she was young. And, of course, at this time, this is unheard of. Her mom had to work a lot. And so, like, Carol and her family were from the wrong side of the tracks, you know? They were poor. They they were looked down upon, especially because her mom got gotten a divorce. And her mom's name was Velda. And then her mom, Velda, married a man named Marion Bartlett. And then they had the little girl, Betty Jean. And like I said, they weren't really wealthy. They lived in Lincoln. So then there was Charles Starkweather, was also born in Lincoln on November 24th of 1938. And he was the fourth of seven children.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. He was born with a birth defect that gave him like bowed legs, and he had a speech impediment. And like at his trial, his father would admit to like pushing him into a window, and his mother would eventually divorce him for violence. So like, was he abused? Like maybe. And he also claims to have been bullied in school because of his speech impediment and stuff. And like, maybe he was.
Probably was. I mean, kids are right. Terrible, but.
Yeah, but like it doesn't excuse anything.
No, doesn't mean that you turn out to do what you do, but it's fine.
Right. So in 1956, when Charles was 18, he dropped out of high school. And this is also like when he met Carol through her older sister, Barbara. So like eventually he takes a job at a newspaper warehouse because it's close to Carol's school. And Carol at the time was 13.
I was going to say, because that's a 5-year difference. Okay. When I was trying to do the math with their birth years. Okay.
Yep. So Carol's only 13. And like she mentions in a voiceover in the documentary that like they would go to drive-in horror movies and stuff. And like they became an item like pretty early on. And I'm like, okay, red flag number one. Like, I get this was a different time.
Yeah.
But 18 and 13 is...
And I'm sure she thought it was kind of, like, cool because this older guy's
right, an older attention. Guy. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she doesn't want to you know, Lincoln at this point is, like, a small town, right. You know, considered small town. She's not... happy with the best life home there. Life.
Yeah.
So neither she them, wants clearly. To get out of here. He's probably promising her those things. And for him, it kind of seems to me like I think he became obsessed with her because here's this young girl who also for him, like, of course he's going to go for a younger girl because she's going to pick up on your bullshit and like realize you're not a catch. Mm-hmm. And so like, she thinks he's so cool. She idolizes him. And I'm sure he just
loves
that.
Mm-hmm. Relish in that. Yeah.
Yep. Because, yeah, and for him, like I said, an 18-year-old, you can easily manipulate and groom a 13-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
And also, like, Charlie Starkweather, like, he wanted to be James Dean in, like, Rebel Without a Cause. Mm-hmm. And, like, he would also dress like that, you know, so the leather jacket, the whoopy back hair and shit. Yes.
I did watch a movie on this back in the day, like a really old one, because I just remember that.
So there's a few.
Like black and white movie, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a few different movies and stuff that either were like based on this. I'll mention a few of them that were like more so attached to this case, but there are quite a few that then were like heavily leaned on it. Like they maybe didn't say Charles and Carol Ann, but like, it, yeah.
Yeah, I remember so, the look. That grease look, yeah.
Yep. So he taught her how to drive, and she actually crashed his car, which was actually his dad's car, which led to him being thrown out of the house. And I guess this is kind of when he started to change. He decided life would always be really hard unless he took what he wanted. And so he quit his job at the warehouse and became a garbage man.
Okay.
Cool. Like,
cool. Hey, whatever.
Yeah.
Probably not bad money. I mean, going from that to that, I don't know.
Right. I don't know. I guess at that time, but I feel like nowadays garbage men get fairly decent.
I know. I think so too, because it's a job. It's probably hard to get people to take, but so you have to pay more. I mean,
yeah.
And I'm grateful for those people. Weather. Someone's got to do it. Like, exactly. The weather.
Ugh. I mean, at least now they finally like, but if you think about it, like, up until just a couple years ago, we still had the one dude hanging out the end.
They still have those too. And I've seen it in certain neighborhoods. So
see, that's great because we finally got like now, like they have like we got the special trash cans or whatever, and they have the claw that comes out and gets it. So I was like, because okay. So especially those companies that have the people just hanging out the outside in the cold weather, the rainy weather. Brutal. Like,
yeah,
you got to pay them well.
Yeah.
So he's a garbage man. Cool. Whatever. So then on December 1st of 1957, in the early morning hours, a farmer discovered a body on the dirt road as he was headed into town. The victim was Robert Culver, and he was 21 years old. He was a gas station attendant and had been shot to death, and $20 had been stolen from him. So, of course, this is a huge deal because this kind of stuff doesn't happen in this town. You know, we're still at the time of, like, you know, milk, you know, diners with milkshakes and shit, right? That we see
cheeseburgers
on
those... and, yep, all the things.
Roller skating and poodle skirts. Right?
Man, that's a fun time. Yeah.
Yeah. So police had no leads, except that a bunch of people were like, hey, you should probably go talk to Charles Starkweather because he was seen there several times the night before. And he stays there a lot because Charles at this point is homeless.
Right.
And he's like sleeps outside there and stuff wherever. Sometimes. So remember this later that, this is time number one where the police fail. Okay. This is where they drop their ball, because if they had actually gone to Charlie Starkweather, then they could have prevented so many more murders. So then month goes by. We're now in January of 1958. Robert's case is still unsolved. Carol had told Charlie she was done with him. She says, like, he just got so much more controlling, and he was quick to anger and violent. And she's like, this isn't the guy I had met and stuff. But I'm like, is he? And he just kept it in for a long time.
Right.
Like,
it's different in the beginning, the honeymoon phase. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Especially when you're trying to woo them.
A younger girl. And oh, yes.
Yep. And I mean, I'm sure he did change a bit too, because it said, you know, like once he got kicked out, he was like, oh, the world's against me, right?
Of course.
But I think something would have set him off no matter what. So she kicks him out of the house. I think it's like a Sunday night. And she's like, this is like January 20th. And she's like, I don't ever want to see you again. Like, you need to leave. Don't ever come back. Which I'm sure her parents were happy about, because they did not like him.
Right. I mean,
and that's one thing, like, in the documentary it gets kind of confusing, because in first episode it talks like it says, and I don't know if they were just saying what police tried to put out there, but it was saying that Carol didn't get along with her mom and her stepdad, and she didn't like, but then like later she'd be like, no, I loved them, you know, and stuff, and they'd be like, no, she loved her family, she got along well with them. So like, I don't know if they were, I guess I maybe missed if they were saying like that's what the police said, is that she didn't get along. I'm assuming so.
Yeah.
So now on January 21st, which is, I want to say a Monday probably, in 1958, Charles showed up to the Bartlett household while Carol was at school. He claimed, so like, they also have voice recordings of some of his confessions, like talking to the police. So in it, he's talking about how he had a rug that Velda asked him to bring over, and he did, and then he and Velda got into an argument, and she slapped him three times, so then he got angry and he shoved her, and that's what made him shoot her.
Yeah. Sounds like a fair reason to just shoot someone.
Yeah. Jeez. So he shot her, and then he shot her husband Marion, and this is where the trigger warning for child, I'm not going into any details too badly, but like, he then hit Carol's 3-year-old sister, Betty Jean, with the butt of the gun and crushed her skull. So she did
die. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I did not know any of that part of it. My gosh. Okay. Mm-hmm. No.
I will say, and I don't know, this wasn't ever brought up, and I'm not taking Wikipedia, and so that's why I didn't really put this in here, but on Wikipedia it tries to say, like, he killed their dog too, but this isn't mentioned on the thing, and I didn't research too much, so we're just gonna pretend no animals were at least harmed, okay?
No animals were harmed in the
making of this podcast. Because it's bad enough, everything he does, and, like, the three little girl, like, the 3-year-old and stuff.
That's sickening.
She's three.
And was Carol there, I'm assuming, or did you say
Carol's
that?
Carol's at school.
Oh, she's not there. Oh, gosh. Okay.
No. So at this point, they have an outhouse. They had just gotten an indoor bathroom. So they still have an outhouse.
Jeez.
So he places Velda's body in the toilet in the outhouse. And he then places little Betty Jean in a box and sets it on top of the toilet. And Marion's body he puts in the chicken coop. And now, his story originally will match Carol's in that she was not home She didn't know. And in fact, he had told her they were alive and being held captive. And this is what Carol will continue to say later. And later mm-hmm. when he's angry that, like, the police kind of get him to turn on her. They, like, trick him into this. So later, once he's mad at her, he then changes the story, like, 8 or 9 times. But in the very beginning, when he's still so madly in love with her, he was like, Carol didn't know. She was at school. I told her that they were in a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think that just kind of shows Carol later. So Carol said she came home to Charles pointing a shotgun at her. Like, she came in, she couldn't find her family, which is weird because her mom's always home, right?
Yeah.
So he's pointing a shotgun at her and telling her that her family was being held hostage, and if she did anything, they would be killed. He said he also had friends surrounding the house and watching her as well. So, like, they stay in the house for a while. And in, like, one of the police interviews with her later, like, she talks about how he left every night, but he would tie her up.
Okay.
And again, like, she's like, not so much that it would hurt,
but just so she couldn't, like, leave.
But so she couldn't leave. But she also still had the fear that, like, if she did do anything, he's got friends watching, right? And they're going to kill her family. So the thing is, like, I think they end up staying here for, like, 6 days or so. But people come to the door because, like, milk gets delivered still and shit. Yeah. And she just turns everyone away. She's like, hey, we're all sick. She eventually puts a note up in the door, which later, like, her lawyers would be like, she was trying to give a sign that she was in trouble.
Needed
because
help.
The sign they show, it pretty much is like, hey, everyone has the flu. Please leave us alone. But she signed it Ms. Bartlett. And the thing is, she was Fugate. She didn't take Marion's last name. Her mom would have been Mrs. Bartlett. The only Ms. Bartlett in the house would have been Betty Jean, who was three and couldn't write.
Right. Yeah.
And so she underlined that part like 3 times, I think, trying to get people to
notice something was off. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, Ms. Bartlett, you know?
Right. And then the stepdad, did he have a job? Like, or did they just say he was sick and that's why he wasn't reporting to work? I mean, I'm sure that's a whole nother, it doesn't matter. Because
you know, I don't feel like, I think they did talk about his job. Maybe he was there. Maybe he did stuff at the house. Like, I feel like maybe he was some sort of mechanic.
Well, and I guess if they're telling everyone they're sick, people are not going to mess with that anyway. Yeah. I mean.
Well, but the thing is, again, people are like, something's not right here. Several people call the police. Her grandma calls and is like, hey, you need to go check this out. So police go. Carol answers the door. And she's like, yeah, no, everything's fine. Because I'm sure Charles is there.
With a gun.
And again, even if he's not, she still believes he has friends out there watching.
Right.
She's 14 years old.
And her family's not there. Like, as far as she knows, like, if she does something wrong, they're going
to
die.
That they're going to die. Which, FYI to my children, if you ever happen to listen to this, if someone tells you, if you don't do what they say, or if they tell you, if you tell me something, they'll hurt me, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, please tell let me. Them. And chances are they're not going to do that anyway.
Even like sexual predators who abuse children and stuff, they're like, they're not going to believe you. Listen, I will believe you.
Yeah.
Let them try. I will mama bear their ass.
Right. I know my daughter and I were talking about like, if someone the other day at Target, we were leaving and I, you know, like hypothetical situations. Mm-hmm. I was like, if someone grabbed me, put a gun to my head and said, get in the car. I said, would I get in the car? No, I'm going to scream because they're just trying to keep you quiet. Like they would way rather get in trouble for kidnapping versus murder. You know what I mean? So like, no.
And the thing is, if they're putting a gun to your head, you're not going to live anyways. Like,
right. So like, might as well get them to.
And if my kids are there and they're like, if you don't
tell
me now. If they put a gun to my head and they're like, if you don't get in the car, your mom's going to run. I don't care.
Right.
Go.
And this is a total side tangent, and it's not even a tangent. It's just a little tidbit I want to share real quick before I forget. I can't even remember the name of the movie. I watched a very terrible movie on Amazon Prime and I don't remember. However, at the very beginning, you know what the girl used as kind of a deterrent situation? She was being held captive. She pulled out her freaking birdie out of her pocket and pulled the alarm on it right next to like the guy's ears, which of course he's like dramatically like, and which I'm like, okay, you're not going to be like, I mean, but it was enough for her to escape. And I was like, look at that. that. They brought, I got really excited. I meant to tell you that, but that just made me think of that. Anyways, that's
a look at thing. Birdie getting in them cheesy Amazon Woo! Movies.
Yes, that's it. Love okay, it. Go on. Sorry.
The code for your birdie is in our Patreon, or not in our Patreon, our show notes every time, you guys. We stopped putting the ad in because our hosting site has been putting ads in. But just so you know, it's still in there, so you can still get that discount.
Legit. Still legit, clearly.
As we still talk about these things. Okay, so So police are like, okay, cool, we'll just take the 14-year-old's word for it that everyone in her family's fine, even though we have, like, 14, I want to say they said, like, 14 people came to the house in these times. And the grandma was like, you need to go back with a search warrant.
It's just like on Home Alone when they just believe the kid. Oh, yeah, they're fine. It's like, no. Why would you ever just believe a child? Like, no. Yeah. In that sense, I mean.
Yep. So, like later police will say that they didn't take this seriously because they'd gotten calls to that house before. Oh. But it's like, no, it's because she wasn't wealthy. If this had been in an influential family, you'd have been all over it. Also, like later on when police are questioning Carol, which at the time she doesn't know she's being charged when this happens. She thinks she's just helping them convict Charlie. One police officer was weirdly like obsessed with what they were doing in the house and like constantly asking if they had sex, and he would ask it in weird ways at first, but then he was fine, like, did he put his penis in you? And she was and so like she said he stuck it in a little bit, but not much, maybe an inch. And at first she thought it was because like he didn't want to hurt her, but later on she'll realize, and there'll be signs that this is probably it, that he was impotent.
Oh.
So he couldn't. I do think that he had a weird, I'm not going to say he loved her, but I don't think he wanted to physically harm her. I mean, I think he would have raped her for sure if he could have, but I think in his mind he wouldn't have considered it that. But yeah. So she's, I'm still going to say she's sexually assaulted because that's still
And she's a minor anyway. And she's so the a fact minor that he's doing anything like that is not.
Also, it's under duress because now she has to pretend and they'll use this against her later. They're like, well, did you tell him you loved him during all of this? And she's like, well, yeah.
That's generally what happens.
He had a gun and I thought my family was going to die if I didn't keep him happy.
That's how it goes a lot of the time. Like people that are kidnapped and stuff, they try to become friends with their captor to overpower them in that way. Humanize
overcome
them.
If it's someone they know, if it is their abuser, they're going to try to keep them happy. But then a lot of times, like if it's someone they don't know, they're trying to humanize themselves.
Right. And that always seems to work most times. So duh. Mm-hmm. And she already knew him anyway and had a relationship with him. So of course she's going to go that route.
Yeah. The whole reason this started, like I said, I think even without, I'll get into that later. But like this started because she was like, no, you need to leave. I don't want anything to do with you. So this is yet another time police drop the ball. They could have prevented even more murders now. So they don't know that the Bartletts are dead. So we're now up to 4 people dead. It could have still ended there.
You would think they'd smell that too, like outside. I mean, the bodies somewhat. I guess it depends on how far away from their. Oh, it's cold. Yeah. Never mind. Okay.
And if you think about it, it's cold. No one's probably like, they just went up to the front door. No one's actually searching the property.
Yeah.
And Velda and Betty Jean are in the outhouse. That's not going to smell good anyways.
Right. And they don't have any reason to go look anywhere else.
Nope. And his body's in the chicken coop and chickens don't smell great either. And again, January. So Carol's grandmother, like I said, she pushes this issue. And I think Charlie either gets wind of, or he kind of starts to realize like, hey, we can't stick here. So they leave on Monday, January 27th. I think they left either like that Sunday. Or I don't know. They peaced out, right? So then on Monday, January 27th of 1958, they take off towards Bennett, Nebraska. And it's winter and his car gets stuck. So they try for several hours to get unstuck before walking a few miles up the road to a farmer's house. And this is where, like, I think he was 70 years old or 79, August Meyer lives. Charles tells him they got stuck and asks August if he would help him. He agrees. I don't know too much what exactly went on here, but Charlie does shoot him with the shotgun as well. Mm. And so this is now our fifth victim.
Jeez.
Uh-huh. So that same day, one of Charlie's brothers decides, like, him and his friend decide to go and look around the Bartlett home since they don't know. Like, since the police aren't doing anything, they're like, okay, we're going to take this upon ourselves. And they discover the bodies. So it's like around 4 o'clock when the police finally come. And they put word out about Charles' car. But they're now like a day behind him. Because of how long they waited, I think Charlie and Carol probably left fairly early. And so once they put a thing out, someone does report their car near the Meyer home. And now when police go to the Meyer house, they assume Charlie is still there holding August hostage. And at this point, they don't actually know if Carol is dead and buried somewhere else, or if he took her hostage, or what happened to Carol, because they only found her family. They don't know what happened with her.
Yeah.
So they pretty much do a raid on the house only to discover that August's body and that Charlie's long gone. And later, Charlie will say that he had intended to stay there for a while, but had a bad feeling. And so they walked through the woods for like 4 miles before coming to a road and flagging down a car to give them a ride. Okay. So in this car are high school seniors, Robert, Bobby Jensen, and Carol King, which is going to get a little confusing here for a minute because there are two Carols. So these two were high school
at that time.
Yep. So these two were high school sweethearts and the most popular couple in school. I think they were seniors. Everyone figured that they were the couple that was going to get married after high school. They were all very kind. So at this point, news had broken about the murders, and like kids in Lincoln were being taken out of school and stores were closed. But Bobby and Carol stopped to pick up these two people. But I'm thinking, like, if they had heard about it, they probably figured they had nothing to worry about, because Bennett's 24 miles from Lincoln. And maybe at the time it would have technically been further because, you know, cities branching out and stuff. But let's say, for the sake of this, it was still just 24 miles. Well, today that's not far. In like 1958, even with a car, like, cars weren't, you know, crazy fast or anything. So I'm sure it was still a far bit of a drive
that they felt like, okay,
that's like they were still far enough from it. Yes.
Big city. Lincoln.
Yep. So while in the car, Charles tells Bobby to give him his wallet, and they come upon this abandoned like cellar, you know, like back in the day, like tornado cellars or whatever. And so then he has Bobby and Bobby's girlfriend, Carol, get out of the car and go into the cellar. Carol Fugate is still sitting in the car, so she can't see what's going on. So Charles will later claim that he never intended to kill them, but as he was walking away, Bobby attacked him. So he shot them.
Did they not see that he had this shotgun with him when they picked him up?
He could have easily had it hidden, maybe. But also, if you think about it, 1958, they're out in the country. He could have been hunting.
Yeah, or just a lot of people just did that. Yeah, that's fair. But still, my gosh.
Yeah. So he, and in the things they talk about, like, so again, we hear his voiceover, and he said he pulled down Carol King's pants, but he didn't rape her. Not out of, like, any sort of remorse or kindness. He said it was too cold to get it up. Later, when police find their bodies, listen, this is going to get rough, even with me not going into as much detail as they did in the, because they went into detail in the documentary. Yeah. But they were both shot. Carol was stabbed several times, and her genitalia was mutilated, and he had placed things like gravel and stuff in there. I think, you know, nowadays we can recognize that's usually a sign that someone is like sexually frustrated. They have a lot of hate or anger towards this person or gender.
Well, and if he was having issues in that exactly anyway, yeah.
I think he was like, I can't get this up. And I think then in his mind, he's blaming her.
Yeah.
And now they don't say whether she was shot first or this happened. I'm going to say and hope that she was dead before he did all yes. this. Like, he shot her first, I yeah. hope.
I would hope so too. And it was like uh-huh. after, I mean, it's terrible either yes. way, but yeah. Gross.
It's terrible either way, but I hope to God she didn't have to live through that.
Yeah. See, I didn't know this kind of stuff about him. I just knew he basically went on a killing spree. So, like, right. this is really mm-hmm. gross.
Yes. So, once Bobby and Carol's bodies are found, police assume that they're heading further away. But in actuality, they head back towards Lincoln.
Oh.
And on the way, they stop by a service station to get a tire fixed. So this is what makes me think that, one, this might have been a further jaunt than it had been. And two, it takes a little bit more because mm-hmm. they had to stop to get their tire fixed. And this is a thing that's going to come back to in Carol's trial. It's going to they're going to turn this against her. So when Charlie is getting the tire fixed, he sends Carol across the street to a diner to get some hamburgers. He can see the diner from there. Okay, let's just think about that. But so when she's being questioned, they'll be like, well, why didn't you leave then? She's like, he could see me still.
And he had a freaking gun.
Like, and he had a gun. And
clearly
again,
he's not afraid to just shoot anybody. So,
and she still thinks her parents and family are alive and being held captive. So this true. Whole time, this didn't girl think is thinking that she has to
comply be quiet. And like, to, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, in the show, they interview the waitress who ended up helping her. And she said, Charles came in, too, eventually as they were finishing up. And she said, as they walked out, Carol maintained eye contact with her the entire time she was walking away till she was out of sight. And I'm like, you could spin that to be like, oh, she was cold and staring you down. But I'm like, this is a child saying, please recognize yes. I need help.
She's a child. The fact that this young girl is with an older guy like that anyway. I mean, I know, I guess, again, like you said, back then it's a little different. Mm-hmm. But and that kind of thing, too, wasn't like talked about as much either. I mean, like, no. you know, trafficking in general. So,
yep.
oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So after this, Charlie decides to find a home to hide out in, and he picks an influential neighborhood he knew of due to his garbage truck route. And he picks the home of Lauer and Clara Ward, and they were quite a wealthy and an influential family. And in fact, before coming home the evening of his own murder, Lauer was at the governor's house discussing Charlie Starkweather and the manhunt for him. So, like, these people are so rich. Like, he has a Packard, which apparently at this time is, like, a big deal. Like, only, like, two people have this car or uh-huh. whatever. Like, he's a steel mill. I don't know. He's got lots of money, okay?
Top of the, yeah.
Yeah. They do actually have a son, too, who I think was, like, a junior or senior in school. But he was actually away at private school.
Good.
Which is the only thing that saved him.
Jeez. Wow.
So they, in this morning, they break into the home where they find Clara and their maid Lillian. So then, I don't know how exactly this, he said that he told them as long as they behaved, he wouldn't harm them. But later in the day, apparently Clara went upstairs to change because she'd been in her nightgown. And he said she was taking too long, so he went up to check on her. Okay. And he claims she shot at him. And this is why he killed her. Except there's no bullet holes in any of the walls. There's no shell found or anything.
Seems like that's always his go-to defense, is that they tried to attack him. So
yes. So he ends up binding her hands behind her back and gagging her. And he stabbed her to death
Gross.
In her bedroom. And he did the same thing to Lillian, the maid, in another bedroom.
Gosh, and she didn't even do anything. None of them did, but I mean, no. like, why?
And he also mutilated their genitalia as well.
Gross. This is definitely something I never heard of with the killings of this.
So. Uh-huh. Yeah. So then he waited for Lauer to get home, and he shot him to death, and they stole his car. So now also, like, when I was looking at the Wikipedia pages, they try to say that they took the newspaper that had pictures of them and the fact that Carol's family were murdered and cut them out. And like in the Wikipedia pages, it was like, this shows, but like, I didn't find anything else about that. So again, with Wikipedia, I'm like, I don't think so. And like, even if Charles took it, it doesn't mean that Carol saw it.
Right. Right. Just because, like, she's with him as like a hostage doesn't mean she.
Yeah. Because they'll even talk later where Carol had a note that she kept on her this whole time saying, please believe me.
Jeez.
I'm being held, something like that, you know, like asking for help from the police. Like, please, please believe me. Like, this is serious or something like that. Like, it was essentially a note saying, please help me. So they stole this car, which is a 1956 Packard, which, like I said, I guess was super expensive at the time. Not many people had it. So like, this is going to stand out.
Right. Probably not the smartest way to go there.
Yeah. So Charles kind of realizes like, hey, we're probably gonna have to dump this fast. So police arrive at this crime scene, which again, this isn't going to help because if this guy's so well known, also the police are now handling a case of people they know, right? Like,
right.
That's probably not good. And I think this is where they realize Carol is still with Charles, because I think they find a jacket of hers, because she ends up with Clara Ward's jacket.
Oh.
Which is probably much warmer than hers. Because remember, she's poor. And like, even though they have a car, these cars don't stay warm.
No,
like, it's not like you're keeping nice and warm. They're like tin metal boxes with maybe you get some warm air coming out.
Nebraska in January.
Exactly. Mm. So now, I don't know why they decide, if they're already like figuring out we need to cover our asses because we've dropped the ball so hard. But this is when they start to think she's got to be a willing participant. So now we're on to Wednesday, January 29th of 1958. So all of this is happening in such a very short time. Oh, and yeah, so we're up to, so we've had Robert in the beginning.
Oh yeah, the first one.
Carol's family.
That's four.
That's four.
The two
high August.
Schoolers. Oh, August, the yes. Four,
the two high schoolers. And now the these wards. Three. Why did they say that there was 11? I feel like I'm missing 10. A victim now.
I thought there was one in like Wyoming or something. Or did he not?
I know there was an attempted one in Wyoming. Oh, okay. I'm clearly missing someone now. And I'm like, who? I know they talked about all these people. I'm missing someone. Who did I forget? Now I have to Google this quick because I'm like, I don't want to forget. Because so while they get caught in Wyoming,
that's
is
all.
He's
I
trying
maybe
to.
There was someone there. So,
oh. Yeah. They were, he was trying to steal a car from this guy. And he pulls them out and is like taking them. Okay, so we have, that's not what I wanted. So all the victims were, we had Merle? Robert.
There's a Merle? Merrill?
Oh.
That's all.
Okay,
I
so
see.
He was a traveling salesman. Okay, so I feel like they didn't really talk about, who was Merle? Now I'm trying to remember. I must have accidentally forgot to put Merle in my notes. So.
That's okay. I mean, clearly we can see here what.
Yes. So, because the way they talk in there, maybe he did end up killing Merle for the car, because it said they were talking in the documentary about how he was trying to take this car. So I don't know where Merle was killed. They must have killed Merle somewhere else. So I apologize about that one. I feel like that didn't get brought up as much. Now I'm like,
well, there's a lot of them to keep track of, and some of them I feel like don't get as much attention anyway, like
right
at the beginning. Like, it's pretty like cut and dry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that makes sense. It's probably the same type of thing.
Yeah.
It makes it any less terrible, but you know.
Because I'm trying to remember where he would have. Okay, yeah. Said it ended in Wyoming with one final victim. So I'm assuming, yeah. Okay. So maybe that he did kill, because they talk in that about how he was trying to steal a car and this guy came up, the guy fought him off or whatever, but maybe he did shoot him and kill him. But in the documentary, it talks about how he was trying to fight him off, and like all these other cars start to pull up then, including a police car.
Yeah.
And Carol was still in the Packard at this time.
Oh.
So she jumps out and goes running and throws herself into the police officer's arms. And he says she's hysterical, but eventually he made out that she was saying this is Charles Starkweather. So he doesn't, you know, really want to turn himself in at first. Like, they had to, like, fire some warning shots at his feet and stuff at first to get him to drop the gun and get him, like, so they could arrest him. But they do eventually arrest him, and Carol's also arrested. So they're in Wyoming. Police are told about him, right?
And we're in Wyoming. Did it say? I'm just curious.
It did, and I forgot to write it down.
It's fine. I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's so close to my hometown, like Wyoming. Right. That I'm just, I mean, I hate Wyoming. But
yeah.
I don't hate it, guys. It's just boring.
I mean, so was Nebraska. So, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's
fine. Hate on all the, you know.
Yeah, we can do that.
But like, so it sounds like the sheriff's of Wyoming, his wife comes in and she's like taking care of Carol. And she feels so bad for her. She keeps asking to call her parents. And they don't tell her that they're dead. Oh. They just say the line's busy. So
that's probably okay for now. Yeah. I mean,
she's going to have to
find out anyway. So yeah.
Yeah. But she's so hysterical. So this sheriff's wife ends up injecting her with a sedative.
Oh.
And okay. So she's passed out for like 17 hours. So when police finally get there to question her, she's also still very much out of it. She is drunk.
That sounds that also sounds like an illegal thing to do. Yeah, lady. Okay.
But this was also like 58, where they're like,
I was going to say the 50s.
I think coke was still, and masturbation were probably still like cures for depression.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's definitely very much out of it when police come and start questioning her even there. And again, they don't tell her she's being charged with anything. They don't give her a lawyer. There's no Miranda rights yet. Like, she's 14. And right. Actually, she, like, her lawyer's like, she shouldn't have signed the extradition papers, but she didn't have a lawyer there. So she signed the extradition papers to go be taken from Wyoming to Nebraska, mm-hmm. because she thought that meant she got to go home. She thought signing these papers, which, you know, the police, because these police say and do some shady shit. You know, they said, if you sign these, you get to go home to your parents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a kid. Yeah, she doesn't know.
Yeah.
Like, even as an adult, that's
confusing. And she's been through this traumatic thing.
Yeah. Watched him kill all these other people. Yeah, and she's just there because she doesn't want her family to be killed.
Yes. So she keeps asking when she can call her parents, and they keep just telling her later. So eventually the Lincoln detective, Merle Carnop, that's why Merle sounded familiar, because that's the only Merle I remember them talking about. I feel like in this documentary, they didn't bring up Merle. And I'm like, I didn't count in my head how they said there was 11 victims. But then they didn't talk about the 11th. So I will make sure Merle is included in the post this week, you guys, still for sure. This is the dude who's been dropping the ball hard, right? He never questioned Starkweather. He didn't push on getting her house, you know, figured out, you know. So he rides with Charlie back to Lincoln while his wife, Gertrude, rides with Carol. Which, again, I'm like, I feel like a not police officer shouldn't, you know, be doing
that. Yeah, that's probably not smart. Okay.
So now Gertrude says that Carol was cold and emotionless, which, again,
she's traumatized.
She's traumatized. She's probably in PTSD. Yeah. Her body's in shock. Like, she's not processing things yet.
No.
And so now Gertrude was also friends with the Wards and with Clara. So she notices that she's wearing Clara's coat, which I'm like, how the fuck do you know whose coat is whose? Which, obviously, you're probably going to recognize that this coat is too nice for her.
Unless it's like a very specific red, and you know what I mean? Something that sticks out. But
so, like, I can understand her being upset. But like I said, just knowing now what we know of psychology and the human brain and shock and all of that, like, yeah, I can see how Carol, who's only 14 years old and been through all this shit, probably just wanting to focus on something positive. So like, she says to Gertrude, she turns to Gertrude and is like, isn't this such a nice coat? And Gertrude just thinks this is so cold and disgusting, you know? And I'm like, I understand kind of where Gertrude's coming from. But again, with all this, like,
without realizing,
Carol doesn't realize her family's dead. She's been through all of this. And for her, this is probably the nicest piece of clothing she's ever owned.
Right. And she's probably doesn't even know what to talk about. And it's just, I mean,
she's a kid. A child. Her body,
like, the hormones and everything, like, at that age anyway, is like moods all over the place. But then you just went through all this. You're like basically blacking that whole thing out and trying to move on to the next thing.
Yeah. And so that's where I'm like, I would hope in this day and age, we would recognize this poor child's in shock and like go through a psychologist or something like that. So when they get back to Lincoln, Carol keeps asking where her mom is, and Gertrude snaps coldly at her and is like, don't you know she's dead? Your whole family's dead.
Okay.
And that's Carol,
the way to handle it. She gets salty. Oh, so sorry. I don't even know what just happened. My phone made a sound and I touched it and sorry.
Nope, that's fine. I'm leaving that.
Lighten the mood,
a,
you know.
Yeah, that was a fun little thing. So
I don't even know what the hell that was.
That's fine. So Carol refuses to believe this until her older sister Barbara comes in and tells her. And I think it's very telling too, because Barbara sticks by her sister throughout the trial. Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking like they don't discuss Barbara much. I think she had moved out. I think she was maybe married or like, you know, we're kind of at that point. Like
she's old enough to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where she was in all of this, because obviously just the year prior, she's the one who had introduced Carol to Charles.
But she obviously didn't know.
I mean,
the extent of him.
Exactly. But the fact that Barbara also sticks by her sister the whole time, I think is very telling. I would think that she of all people would, I would like to hope that if my sister went on this murder spree and she for sure had something to do with, like, I would recognize that and I would know that.
Right.
Like just talking to her, I'd be like, oh fuck, you did know. Like,
right.
Barbara believes her.
You
right?
know someone well enough to kind of get an idea of when they're lying or not. And
yeah exactly. So again, she's not told that she's actually being charged with anything. She just thinks she's not giving the lawyer nothing.
Help. Yeah.
Yep. So
she's a kid. They're going to take advantage of that. So
exactly. Duh. So again, now, like I said earlier, Charlie at first also says that he told Carol her family was in a safe place and that he had not, like, he had killed and hid them before she got home. But he keeps wanting to see her. And police keep saying, yeah, soon, soon. Which, one, they can't see each other because they're both, you know, under arrest.
Yeah.
So he wants to write her a letter. And they let him, which is also illegal.
Yeah.
But in the letter, like, he's talking to her. And I feel like this letter should show them, too, that she wasn't a willing participant. Because he's like, I hope you're okay. I'm really sorry for everything. But did you really think I would shoot you? I told you I would never hurt you. I would burn the world before I ever hurt you. So it shows in his letter that he knows she feared him. Right. Her letter back to him was on a judge's stationery. So this is showing how shady all of this shit is, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she says on there, I don't remember all of it, but she says, I don't ever want to see you again. But then police also tell him that she called him crazy. And this is what sets him off. Because that's his biggest thing, is like he never wants people to think he's crazy. And this is when he turns on her. This is when his story changes multiple times. Carol's now the one who was pushing him forward. He did this all for her. But his story changes like 8 or 9 different times. Yeah. And hers never, ever changes. And
that should say something. Gosh, that's sad.
So like I said, there's all this shady shit going on. So police are, or everyone's pissed at the police because they're like, you didn't go stop this. You could have stopped this at the first victim.
Yeah.
You didn't push in. So now the police are swinging this like this was a Bonnie and Clyde thing. Because the thing is, even back then, everyone was so enamored with that, right?
Yeah.
This is a sensational thing. So now we're going to look at how this, instead of the police and the prosecutors, are dropped the ball. Mm-hmm. Also, the sheriff, Kinnop or whatever, and the prosecutor are both up for re-election this year.
Oh.
So now they especially need her to be convicted. Because otherwise, again, it just comes back to them looking bad.
Right. Because people want, what they, I mean, they're going to believe whatever they hear and see and what they want it to be. So.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds way cooler when you find out it's like that. Yeah. You can hate them both. Yeah.
And the thing is too, is like he's in, Charles Starkweather is interviewed by news media people and stuff. Because at this time, like cameras are just coming out. Like video is a new thing. And he actually starts to write his autobiography in jail. And Parade magazine, I guess, is super big at this time. It's national. They print a, like a condensed version of it.
Oh, great.
And in it, he says, I wanted to turn myself in, but Carol said she never would. And here she was with a shotgun across her lap, pointed at me. And I'm like, she was a tiny 14-year-old.
Right. So clearly you could overpower her anyway. And why would people buy into that crap? She's just a kid.
Yes.
What kid can pull that off?
This is where the media, everyone takes Charles' word as gospel. Despite the fact that he's 19 and she's 14, she's an eighth grader.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And he's the murderer. Like, he never said she pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Like, maybe a couple times he did, and then he took it back and said she didn't, but she was always there for it. She always egged him on.
There's no motive there either. I mean, other than, okay, yeah, you want to rob these people, but for what? Like, you're a kid still. You're not going to get away with that. But because
he's a man, he's believed. And, you know, and this is where, too, I just think, like I said before, I think even if Charles had never met Carol, something would have set him off. He would have done this eventually.
Right. It was just easy to have her there with him just to
keep him company. She was the particular catalyst for this because she said, I don't want to see you again.
Oh yeah. But if it wasn't her, it was going to be the next
person. It was going to be some other person or someone who said the wrong thing to him. Because the thing is that actually, if you think about it, he already did. The whole reason why he killed Robert, the gas station attendant, is because he wouldn't sell him a stuffed animal on credit.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So this means he had already told him started it.
So that's,
Robert wouldn't have been his first.
Mm-mm.
Or wouldn't have been his last.
No. So he would have continued on. He liked it. And that's why he went. And just, he wanted to hurt Carol for hurting him. That's why he killed the family. Like,
yes. So Carol's lawyer, like someone in his team, a woman, is like, we need to get her interviewed and put her ahead of this because like they're getting Charlie's and stuff like that. The problem is one, they should have made her look her age. They made her look like a young woman.
Of course. Let's put on the makeup and all the things. Yeah. Make her look like because a child just because she is a child.
Because she is a child. Just sitting there, she looked like she could have been like 18 or 19, which at that time frame, they're going to consider an adult, right? She could have been married and popping out a baby already.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue is her lawyer said, do not get emotional. So Carol shut down.
She had a really crappy lawyer.
And I will say in this, like, so his grandson is interviewed and he even says he was wrong in this.
Yeah.
They should have made her look younger. They shouldn't have done this.
Different time, though, too. Like, I mean.
Yes. And also, he's a man, and he's like, oh, we don't need a hysterical woman up there. But I'm like, no, that's what's going to help her. So, unfortunately, she just answers the question. So, she comes off as cold and unfeeling. Mm-hmm. So, this furthers the case that they think, nope, she was part of it.
Of course.
So.
She doesn't know any different. Because it's not like something like that happens every day where they get to see that and watch that. And no.
And again, it's Nebraska. I mean, people are still judged for the way they grieve. And we know now, like, everyone grieves differently. We all shut down in different ways. And like, yes, sometimes I think you can tell with these people. But again, we have a 14-year-old girl who hasn't had time to grieve the fact that her parents are actually dead.
Right.
And that she's on trial. Like, because like when she finally got a lawyer, she didn't know she needed one. She's like, what do you mean? He's like, you're being charged.
Yeah, that would be confusing too. And like, yeah, you're going through this trauma and grief and
Yes. Mm-hmm. So
at a young age, that's a lot to endure at that age.
Yes. So eventually Charlie's trial is first. Carol, again, is made to look like the instigator of everything here. His parents would testify that he changed after meeting her.
That's sad that they're going to defend him after all that too. What 14-year-old can convince an older guy? I mean, to that extreme.
If his character changed, it's because he became obsessed with her because this is the first person to think he hung the moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here, yet again, her character is being assassinated, but there's no one there to defend her. So people are hearing this. I don't know if they use the same jurors for both trials, but the jurors are hearing this and stuff now too. So that's already going to cloud their opinion, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So yeah. So they only charged Charlie with the murder of Robert Calvert, who was the first victim. They said because this was the easiest one to prove, but I'm like, he admitted to all of them. I don't understand.
Right.
How
that doesn't even make sense, especially all of them. Yeah, the family and being tied to her, like okay.
He admitted to all of them. How I don't understand this.
Yeah, that's generally not how that goes when they admit to it and then they say, "Oh no, actually, you're good." Like, right. No.
So then we get to Carol's trial. Uh-huh. They try her as an adult, even though she's 14, which nowadays you have to, I think you have to have like a small pretrial first to determine whether or not.
Even get to that point.
Yeah, I think you once don't they're just like they're around like 15 or 16, you have to, like, it has to be some extenuating circumstances. Mm-hmm. But I think even then you have to have a trial.
Yeah. And for her lawyer to not fight for that too, then that just shows.
I don't know if at that time, if they had, I don't know for sure, you know,
they probably didn't have them happen a lot either back then where they had to do these kind of things. So,
But she for sure should have been tried in juvenile court. So now both the prosecutor and the sheriff, like I said, were up for re-election. Oh, also that note. So like they sent a bunch from Wyoming. They sent a bunch of evidence to Lincoln. Lincoln sent it all back except for this note. The note that Carol had on her was just gone.
Oh, okay. So they picked and chose what they wanted to make it there. Okay.
Exactly. And also, Charlie's actually a witness for the prosecution in her trial.
Of course he is.
Uh-huh. So she could have left
under the bus and
said she could have left at any time and she was a willing participant.
Wow. And they bought that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because again, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wasn't she on the stand for his, you know, like,
right? Just because she's like a kid too, like, and they're gonna just let a kid take the fall without realizing
100% they are.
I mean, back then too, yeah, it was definitely different times.
She's a kid and she's a woman, who cares?
Yeah.
So the jury felt like she had ample opportunity to get away and found her guilty as an accomplice to murder, which I'm like, how is this possible? Because she wasn't even there for Roberts. And if Charlie wasn't tried for the others, don't understand how you can then do this.
Right. And if you're not going to tie, her to the murders either, but you can just say like, accessory to what? No, she wasn't.
Just that she was an accomplice to it all. And she was sentenced to life in prison.
Damn.
She was the youngest person to be sentenced to life in prison in Nebraska at the time. Maybe still the time, I'm assuming, because and I'll bring him up again later. Leslie was 17.
And just Leslie to be an Arnold. Accomplice, like, oh yeah, that's crazy. That's
yes. Mm-hmm. So cruel and Carol's devastated. Punishment. Yeah. So Carol, you just wait. You think that's unusual? Mm-mm. So Carol being 14, she was so hopeful that they were going to see that she was innocent. How could they not see the truth? Right. Right?
She really didn't do anything. Yeah.
So she actually asked them, she's like, if you truly thought I was guilty, why not give me the death penalty too? Because Charles was sentenced to death.
I would rather at that point, personally.
So
but
she is sent to the women's correctional facility in York, Nebraska. And this is where Cruel and Unusual comes in even more. But because of her age, she's kept in solitary confinement for a year and a half before she can be put in with the general population.
Wow.
Which we know can fuck with your psyche too.
Yeah, and she's already messed up because of everything she saw.
And you're in her most formative years.
And how is that helping her out by keeping her out of general pop, by putting her in solitary? Like...
Yep. No. Why didn't you put her in a juvenile detention center until she was of age?
Yep. Which should have been what they did to begin with, but
yeah. Uh-huh. But she talks about how even then she would stare out the window she had there, and every time a car came up, she had hope that it was someone coming to correct the mistake of her being there.
That's heartbreaking.
So
can't even imagine that. That's
the
worst, like, nightmare. Yeah.
So as Starkweather's execution date was approaching, she was writing to whoever she could asking for a stay of execution so she could convince Charlie to recant and admit she wasn't a willing participant. But then many people took this as a sign of her continued guilt, which I'm like, she's literally trying to get him to
tell the truth. Yeah.
So his execution date was originally set for June 23rd, 1959, which I'm like, they were so much faster back then.
I was going to say, that's a quick turnaround. That's a speedy trial. That's there to that. Dang.
But also, like I said, quick aside, some of you might recall, this was our first episode of the year, episode 42, which I'm like, episode 42, we're on 74.
Yeah.
But it was about Leslie Arnold from Omaha, Nebraska, who was the 16-year-old who killed his parents. And he spent some time in prison with Charlie right before he was taken to the electric chair.
That's right. Oof.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. Little crossover there.
Yeah, I was going to say, look at that connection.
Mm-hmm. So now, June 23rd, like I said, was his scheduled execution date. But right as the doctor who was coming up to the door, because you have to have a doctor there to pronounce the time of death.
Mm-hmm.
He had a heart attack and died.
Wow, what are the chances of that?
Right, like literally, he's going up to the door and drops.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't know, maybe
it's a
sign
intervention in a way. Right? I was like,
maybe
it's
a sign from some higher power. We should let her try to convince Charles to tell the truth.
Yeah.
So it's only 2 days later, on June 25th, in the early morning hours, because apparently the electric chair is a huge drain on the electricity in the whole town. Mm-hmm. So they do it like early in the morning. That's when he was taken to be executed, and he actually asked for the straps to be tightened. And when they asked if he had final words, he said no. So, despite never recanting his story, Carol didn't give up on trying to clear her name. And again, it's to point out, like, his story changed 8 or 9 times. Hers hasn't changed.
Right.
And
how is that not assigned to, like,
right? So the story of Charlie and Carol, as it was being presented by police and prosecutors and Charlie in the media, became an inspiration for a lot of magazine stories and movies. So they used a lot of this, you know, Carol was always portrayed as this cold, calculating person who was a willing participant. So this just continued to paint her in an ugly light in the public eye, despite it being fiction.
Jeez.
So now, at one point, a new warden for the women's prison is there, and this is Jackie Crawford, who was only 36 when she became warden, which was like the youngest in the states at the time.
That is young.
So she was a little bit more progressive. She made some changes and allowed prisoners who were on good standing within the prison, they were allowed to leave to go see their lawyers. Well, Carol's lawyer, since he was in Lincoln, she got to spend the weekend with like him. And so they're interviewing his grandson. He's like, yeah, she would spend the weekend with my grandparents or even with my parents. He was like, she babysat me sometimes.
Wow.
Yes. But her lawyer took her to a pool one weekend at an apartment and someone complained. And so she was no longer allowed these visits.
And she wasn't even doing anything wrong. It's not like she was caught doing something bad to take that away from
she
her.
She was
just
with
because
her lawyer.
Someone complained. Okay. Mm-hmm.
She was with her lawyer's family. And So Carol actually went to Jackie once asking to be put back into solitary confinement because she was in such a tricky situation. Because she couldn't be seen as getting too friendly or familiar with the inmates, because then this is going to make her look like she's guilty, right? Like she belongs there. Yet she couldn't be seen being friendly and familiar with like the, you know, people in charge, the warden, the, you know, stuff like that, because then the other inmates would get pissed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's still lose.
So that being said, like they interview this Jackie woman too. And she's like, you know, obviously Carol at one point got really depressed at one point when parole was denied her. Jackie was like, we made her dress up. Like, no, you're not. Like, it seems like Jackie believed in her too.
Yeah.
And so, so Carol had never done anything wrong, right? She never had any marks against her. She followed all the rules. Jackie talks about how whenever there was conflict, you could just see her freeze up. She was never part of it.
Scared. Yeah.
So she wanted to go into solitary confinement because the other inmates were trying to pressure her into breaking her perfect record.
Yeah. Cause they're bored and have nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. So cool.
Yeah. And Jackie talks about in the interview, too, how Carol blamed herself for all the murders because if she had never met him, then these wouldn't have happened. But like I said before, like Charlie clearly showed, like his first victim, you know, he would have done it anyways.
And you go through all the stages of the grief, too, where, you know, I'm sure she did feel responsible to it because they convinced her of that, too. I mean,
yeah. Well, and you got to have survivor's guilt, too.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That's I wonder crazy. How Barbara felt too, knowing that she introduced her sister to him and stuff.
Right.
So
that's
now,
crazy.
In 1973, the director Terry Malick, he was also interviewed on this show, made the movie Badlands, which starred Martin Sheen and Sissy Spacek as Charlie and Carol. Which it's funny because looking at Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen looks so much like him when he was younger, like when Martin Sheen was younger.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah, the resemblance is very striking.
Yep. So Martin and Terry actually came to York, Nebraska and had a special screening, and Carol was allowed to go. And she said that Martin had captured all of Charlie's mannerisms so well that it was like he'd come back to haunt her.
Creepy.
But that's all they talk about. I am curious to know how she felt about the way she was portrayed, though, because right. Sissy Spacek portrayed her as cold and unfeeling and just like being
part of course,
like,
that's so, how like, they've put her out there to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So really I am not helping her case.
No. So I am very curious about like what she actually felt about that, you know?
Yeah.
So after this movie, Bruce Springsteen sees it. He loved it and became inspired, and he wrote a song called Nebraska about Charlie and Carol, adding more fuel to the narrative that Carol was a willing participant.
Of course, because that's a fun story to tell that way. It makes it a lot cooler that way.
Exactly. So
storytelling.
Mm-hmm. So in 1976, Carol became before the parole board. She'd served 18 years at this point.
Jeez. So how old is she? I guess I can't do the math. That'd be what, 42 or something-ish?
32.
Oh, 32. Yeah. Because she was only 14. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is young, but I mean, she's missed all her crucial years of teen. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jackie talks about in there, like, she's like, they just wanted her to admit guilt, and she refused. She would rather spend the rest of her life in jail than admit that she was a willing participant.
I get that.
But she was shocked. They paroled her. And, you know, she had said, she's like, I just want to have a normal life. I want to be a housewife and have children and all these things, right? So on June 20th of 1976, to help her leave and not be bombarded by the press and try to give her, like, not let the press know, they put her in the trunk of the warden's car late at night.
Hey, whatever then, works.
Yep, and drove her to the airport because she was being paroled to Michigan to serve, like, to Clinton County.
Yeah.
Of course, the press found out. It seems like, I'm sure some people were mad that she was being released there, but it actually seems like a lot of people were pissed that the press released that she was going to be there. Like, they were like, no, give her some privacy.
Give her a chance. A fair
chance. Like, they showed some interviews, and like, one woman was like, if she wants to start over, this is the best place to do it. Everyone's, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
So Carol served as a hospital orderly during the day. And there it says she got along with everyone, but then later they'll talk about how some people were still very mean to her, refused to ride in the elevator with her and stuff like that.
That's so young too, especially after that much time has passed and whatever.
Yes. But then she also answered an ad for a nanny wanted for family in the evenings. And now the mom and the daughter are interviewed in this. And they were like, you know, the mom who was like, yeah, when I told my mother, she's like, I think she dropped the phone. She's like, do you know who this is? But they hired her. They loved her. They said she was so good with kids. But Carol didn't want to have kids of her own because she knew that they would then take on her notoriety, and she didn't want that for them.
How sad.
Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like they show some home videos, like this family threw her a surprise birthday party and stuff like that.
So she kind of had her own family. Like,
it seems like she very much became kind of a part of this family.
Well, good.
But her story would come up, like it'd be brought up again every few months and stuff. And like, actually one night while she was leaving the hospital, she was ambushed by the press. So,
of course.
Mm-hmm. So in 1983, she decided to go on the national television show Lie Detector, which I guess I didn't know about this show, but it was like people who felt like they were wrongly confused would go on to it and they would do a lie detector test and determine if they were lying.
That's so interesting. That's a spin on Jerry Springer.
Right. So she thought this would be the way to get her truth out. So she went on the show and they asked her if she was there when her family was killed. She said no. They asked if she was aware of them being murdered. She said no. And the lie detector, like nothing on it changed. And they were like, yeah, this, according to this, you're telling the truth. And the guy, the host was like, I believe you. Good. And, you know, she starts crying on the show. Yeah. They show it. And like, she just felt like she held a press conference and she was like, I feel so vindicated with this.
Yes.
And like, someone in the press was like, well, why did you do this? Like, because your story hasn't been brought up in a long time. She's like, actually, that's what prompted this. My story had just been brought up yet again. So,
and this story is my entire life. I've had to live with this my entire life. So whether it's in the news or not, like,
yep. And of course, some of the detectives who have worked the case were still claiming that she was guilty, right?
Because they don't want to look bad now.
So then she went on a show called A Current Affair in 1989 and talked about how Charlie had told her, if I can't have you, I'll make it so no man can.
That Which he did. Sounds about right.
Like, yep, he then turned around and did this. And Then I think in that same year, she went onto a show called Crime of the Century and underwent an interview while under hypnosis. Because at this time, it's around the time where like repressed memories is becoming a big thing. And she is terrified that maybe she has repressed a memory that shows she was involved. And she told someone close to her, she goes, "If it turns out I had something to do with it, I'll kill myself."
I bet. I mean, honestly, like that would be the worst after fighting, you know, for your innocence that long.
But afterwards, the psychologist told her, he was like, "You've been telling the truth the whole time." She had so many copies made of this recording that she sent to anyone who was involved. And I think she sent it to random people from the phone book, too, to try to get it out there.
Just out. Yes.
Yes.
I don't blame her. After living in, like, that kind of life for that long, anybody that would listen, like, spread the news.
Uh-huh. So then in 1996, a couple of men, which I don't remember, I didn't write down their names, pitched the idea of Murder in the Heartland to ABC, which would be a miniseries about Charles Starkweather and Carol Ann Fugate. ABC bought it immediately. They were like, "Hell yes, we will." And the thing is, the director, everyone involved, they actually worked with Carol's appeals lawyer, who was actually now the son of her first lawyer.
Oh, okay.
And so they wanted to make this more like a documentary. And actually, Tom Roth played Charlie Starkweather, which you'd if you don't know the name off the bat, like you'd recognize him if you saw him. Tom Roth.
Okay.
He's been in a bunch of like Tarantino movies and stuff like that. And he's done some directing and stuff too. You'd recognize him if you saw him. And then Firouza Balk, who you may recall as the girl from The Craft who goes off the deep end with all the power.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and to both of those, because I just looked him up, and yes, I do know him.
Yes.
Oh, funny.
So they played, so she played Carol. I see
him kind of being that, playing him.
Yes.
Kind of similar looks. Okay.
They wanted to keep it, like, they even show a side-by-side of Firouza playing Carol doing that interview where everyone thought she was cold and unfeeling and they placed that, like, they kept the wording and everything the exact same.
Wow.
And so it got good reviews at first until, like, I think someone in the Washington Post wrote this scathing review calling it murder porn. And then it started this whole uproar because there was already an uproar about violence in the media. And supposedly an 18-year-old in Canada saw the miniseries and copied the murders. I did a very quick, I didn't look too hard, but I did a quick Google for it and I didn't see anything. So ABC capitulates like easily. They don't try to fight at all. They end up airing like 4 hours of hemorrhoid commercials in place of this.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
So what really sucks is like this would have shown the true story and maybe could have gotten it out there more for people to see, which it looks like you can maybe watch. Like I Googled it. There might be ways. There's a part of me that wants to watch it.
Yeah, but I'm, just you to know. See. I know. Mm-hmm. Especially now that you've, I mean, gone down the rabbit trail here.
Yes. So then in 1996 in Lincoln, Carol's lawyer went onto this radio show that was really popular in Lincoln. I might have written this wrong because it sounds weird. It's called the John Stephen Barry Show. And so, like, her lawyer was actually friends with this guy, and he, the host, Steve Barry, wanted to bring him on. And he was like, "Hey, I don't think you would, like, you might get a lot of hate for this." Because obviously her lawyer is trying to appeal for her, you know, stuff for her. So whatever. So they took some calls and some people were like, "No, yeah, she deserved it." Well, Carol actually called in and neither one of them thought, they didn't know she was going to do this. So she ends up talking with them this whole time. They go through, they record through commercial breaks. They don't go to commercial breaks. They actually go over into, there was supposed to be a sports show after this one. They go through that one. And Stephen Barry is like, "Is it okay if I let on other callers to talk to you?" And she said yes. And she got so much support. So many people saying, "We believe you."
Well, like, that's awesome.
You know, all of this stuff. And like, she's sitting there crying. She's like, "I'm so sorry. I don't mean to, you know, but like,
yeah,
this is the first time."
Yeah.
And so at that point, Steven's like, "I knew then I needed to do something to help her." So he actually reached out to Liza Ward, who was the granddaughter of Lauer and Clara, to see if she'd write a letter on behalf of Carol to get her conviction pardoned. And so Liza at first had been told her grandparents died in their sleep. And she talks about how when she was a kid, she was terrified to go to sleep because she was afraid that would happen to her too.
Gosh.
And then when they told her, all they said was it was a very bad man who killed your grandparents. They never brought up an accomplice or anything. So she just ended up finding out it was Charlie Starkweather. So she read all the books, the media stuff and everything. And that's how she found out about Carol. So then she goes through, she got all the court records and read through them individually, like of them. And this is where she decided she didn't think Carol had anything to do with it. But she was worried about writing the letter being a betrayal to her father because her father still saw Carol as guilty by association.
Oh, wow.
But he told her to write it. He said it wasn't a place that he could ever go, but she could. Because this poor kid, he lost his family. The media at this point was like standing on headstones and stuff trying to get video of him as he's burying his parents. Like, and let's face it, at that time and probably up until this day, this man probably never has had therapy for this, right?
Yeah, so, I'm sure. Gosh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she writes that letter. And then, okay, real quick before we go back into this, I want to talk about, because I didn't really know where to put this, but I wanted to put this in here. Uh-huh. So in 2006, Carol met Fred Claire at a casino. It sounds like I think they got married. I don't know timeline too much. He had adult sons because they're both older at this point. Mm-hmm. They were leery at first because of who she was, but they came around. One of them was actually on the show being interviewed, and he said his father pampered and took care of her, and that was probably the only time in Carol's entire life that anyone had done that for her. And he had a camper, so they just traveled around the United States visiting other places and stuff. But unfortunately, in 2013, late one night, they were heading to a casino in Michigan, and Fred fell asleep at the wheel and hit a mile marker, and it flipped their truck. Carol broke a ton of bones and was in critical condition, but he died at the scene.
How sad. Oh.
Oh, and then it's going to get worse, because when one of the son who was on the show talks about how when he was going to visit her in the hospital, like going to see her after all this had happened, and mind you, he just lost his father, press was there and they were like, did she kill your father? And he said, I'm not going to lie, I cussed at them and I said some pretty vile things to them because they cared about her too.
Good. I mean, I'm glad that they did.
But like they show headlines and so many headlines were like murderous in critical condition after accident, you know, murder, like she accomplice on, like, it was all of this. And that's just it. Some people were like, oh, I bet was she driving? Did she grab the steering wheel? They all think she had something to do. Like,
of course,
keyboard, you know, people going on about how she was doing this. And like his sons then took and they remodeled the house before she came home, like put a new carpet, fresh paint, put up all these pictures of the two of them together to make it feel more like her home.
Sad.
And I'm not sure when, it's kind of vague. They just said soon after, and by soon, I don't know if they mean like within months or within a few years, but, Carol actually had a stroke and it made it so she couldn't read anymore and she had a harder time talking and stuff. Because actually the documentary, this is based off of The 12th Victim. There's a book called The 12th Victim, which I'd actually be interested in. So her stepson read it out loud to her and she'd be like, yeah, that's true. Or sometimes she's like, it was actually way worse in person.
Wow. That's cool though, that he like read it to her and took the time to do that. I'm glad that you're nice to her.
Yep. So, okay. So now back to the pardon part. So in 2020, it came up and not only was Liza there, but other descendants from the other 11 murder victims were all there in favor of Carol being pardoned.
Wow. Cool.
Oh, it was. Okay, except that they refused to hear any testimonies or witness statements. Like they just straight up denied. They opened it. They were like, no, she was charged with first degree murder. We're not going to pardon this. And Stephen Barry speaks up, like they show the video of all of this. And he's like, can I actually just correct the record? And fucking Pete Ricketts, the cue bald headed prick, was like, no, you cannot, because she wasn't charged with first degree murder. And there's another former like governor, senator or something on there. And he was like, the fact that they didn't hear testimony or witness statements, he was like, was cowardice on their part. But
how can you even make an educated decision without looking at that all?
Like, nope. They were just like, no, we're not gonna do it. And this is 2020.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you not look back and see all of this and be like, yeah, that was fucked?
Yeah.
what harm does it do at this point to give her right. a pardon?
Right. Especially knowing, yeah, everything mm-hmm. you know now.
Yep. So her lawyers are still fighting for her pardon to this day. But Liza did go and visit her at one point. And, you know, when Liza said when she told her her name, she started to cry. And she's like, I'm not here to make you feel bad or do anything. I wanted you to know that I believe you.
Good.
And, like, I think that was probably so great for her, too. Yeah. And I'm like, to know now, hopefully, that all these... but also, I want to give the abuse hotline number. Mm-hmm. It'll also be in the show notes. I know we've given this before, but anytime we talk about this stuff, I think it's just good to repeat it. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, I know she wouldn't have had at this time. But
right.
we have this now. So it's 800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 8878. And so I think you can see why I kind of went the route I did instead of just kind of, and of course I would have loved to have been able to give more information about the victims, but again, that time frame, there's just not right. really.
Well, she but is we the do, 12th victim, I guess.
She like is they the say, 12th victim.
So, and there's a lot to that. Cause like, I always just thought he had sidekick with him. Like I said, mm-hmm. I didn't research it enough to know the whole story, but nope. yeah.
I just knew the vaguest sense of it. And like I said, I one didn't realize she was only 14. I thought she no. was not that 16. I thought or
they
17.
Were like the same age. I didn't even realize he was that young, to be honest. So
mm-hmm. yeah,
that's so just, that's crazy.
I know. It's like, we haven't had a longer case in a while. I knew this one was going to be longer. Yeah. So, well,
and it's not that the rest of them aren't interesting, but it's always more interesting when it's like your home state too.
And yeah.
You have a case well, like this I said, big, it doesn't yeah, get a lot and there of was attention. Just,
then there was just so much to it. Cause I did try to say, I was like, okay, could I leave this out? And I'm like, so much of it was still, mm-hmm. I felt so important to showing like,
yeah, we could really what, do like a whole series. I mean, on just that alone, probably. Cause there's so
yes.
much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I feel like, yeah, I got a good feel of like everything that actually happened. Cause I didn't even know all the ins and outs of that. And I did not know where she was with it. So
I will say the miniseries is worth the watch. Like I said, do know that they go into more graphic details yeah. with some things than I did. I do think it probably didn't need to be 4 1-hour sessions. Some parts, like towards the end, I felt got a little repetitive, a little dragged out. But overall, mm-hmm. I still thought it was really interesting, mm-hmm. a really good thing. I am kind of interested in reading that 12th victim yeah. book now as well.
For sure.
But yeah, so there's that. I know this is a long one, so we probably won't really go into the books and movies and shows and stuff. Except for I will say one thing. Go see Bottoms. It's hilarious.
I don't even think I've heard of that. I don't even know.
I'm pretty sure I sent you the link. Okay, I'll send you if
I
didn't.
I'll go look at it. Yes, yeah, I'll go look again. I'm just bad with like okay. titles and stuff. So I
it's a it's like called. Two lesbian high schoolers start a fight mm-hmm. club at school to try to, or a self-defense club to try to meet girls.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like super bad, and Fight Club had a baby and then went a little more ridiculous because it is a ridiculous over the top movie, but mm-hmm. done intentionally so. So it right. all works well. Like I laughed hysterically.
I'll have to look because I don't think I've even heard of that one.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 would recommend. Well, so
I have nothing to recommend today. So.
Yeah. To at least end on that little bit.
Yeah.
Lighter note. Also, if you wanted to get into the paranormal activities, 1 through 4 are really good. 5 and 6 are meh. 7 apparently is kind of a reboot and I haven't watched it yet.
That is also fair. There you go.
So there you go, you guys. Yeah. We are on all the social media things and we have an email and we have a website. And if you could like and share and review or subscribe mm-hmm. wherever you're listening, that helps us out a ton.
Yeah. Engage with any of our social posts.
Yes.
And yeah, share those.
Yeah. Everything's in the show notes, you guys. I don't think you need me to repeat all the things. You know where it's at.
Yeah,
you know where
by
we
now
are.
You know. If you've been listening, you definitely yeah. know.
And if you haven't been listening, it's in our show notes. You can find us yeah, real easy.
There you go. There you go. Make it real easy for you.
Yeah. So until next time, stay heartland kind.
But darkland wary.